Jamie Parsley's a North Dakota writer. He's an associate poet laureate of the state. We've had him on from time to time with his poetry, and when a book of his came our way recently, we were interested to see that it was not poetry, but short stories and a play. I connected with Jamie on the internet to talk about it. The book is called The Downstairs Tenant, and the stories have a very distinctive character. We are going to start off with Jamie reading part of one.
The story is called Mrs. Wentworth's Azaleas. The front page of Pinkham, North Dakota's daily newspaper, The Eagle, for Tuesday, December 22, 1959, bore the headline, Local Nun Bears Mysterious Wounds. The full-page story went on to tell of how a 24-year-old nun at the Sisters of Mount Tabor Convent awoke one morning the week before to a horrible pain in her wrists. When she turned on the bedside light, the story read, the young novice found her bed covered in blood and two holes about an inch and a half in diameter in each wrist. Two independent doctors were called to the convent to investigate, and both reported that they could put their entire fingers into the wounds on Sister Bessier's wrists, although doing so caused the young novice much physical suffering. From the time the story appeared until her death from leukemia at 10:30 on Thursday morning, August 15, 1963, the young nun was hounded by pilgrims, skeptics, charlatans, and the simply curious. A national Catholic newspaper in 1961 counted as many as 500 pilgrims on the grounds in front of the Mount Tabor Convent that year on the Feast of the Presentation, some of them traveling from as far away as England, the Belgian Congo, and Goa, India. The Tuesday before her death, she asked if it was at all possible to go home to her parents' house to die. Much to the reluctance of the superior of the convent and the bishop of the diocese, the request was granted. Late that evening, Sister Mary of Jesus Crucified was bundled in the back of her parents' station wagon and whisked past the crowds of people who had gathered outside the convent's gates. On the day of her death, word spread quickly through the town that the nun had died at her parents' home on Stockdale Drive on the west end of town. At noon, the bells of Immaculate Heart Catholic Church began tolling. By 1 o'clock that afternoon, the crowd waiting for the hearse from the Durer Zeitung funeral home to take her body away had come together on the front lawn of the Bessier house on Stockdale Drive. By 2:15, the mass of people was so thick it overflowed the Bessier's lawn onto the lawn of Mrs. Althea Wentworth, the Bessier's neighbor. Get off my lawn, Mrs. Wentworth barked through her screen door the moment several of the people from the crowd were pushed across the invisible boundary between the two lawns. Get off, she hollered. Look, look what you're doing. The tall, thin, sharply featured woman motioned in front of her at her porch where the sickly looking flowers grew around the brick basement foundation. Do you see? Do you see what you're doing? You're stomping down my azaleas. We're not anywhere near your azaleas, a gnarled-looking woman in a turquoise sleeveless dress and matching hat shouted back at Mrs. Wentworth. We're just here to see them bring out the saint. Mrs. Wentworth growled and threw open the screen door. In a moment, she had covered her front lawn with a stiff, determined stride and confronted the people nearest her house. Closer to the Bessier home, a hymn rippled through the people, quickly gaining strength. Sing of Mary, pure and lowly, Virgin Mother undefiled. Get out of here, Mrs. Wentworth shouted over the singing. Go on, all of you. The handful of spectators nearest the woman shifted together away from her as she waved at them madly. Fairest child of fairest mother, God the Lord who came to earth, the crowd sang. Get off my damn lawn, Mrs. Wentworth shouted. What are you saying? A short man in shirt sleeves and black felt fedora gasped, putting a finger to his ear. His face was shiny with sweat. I can't hear, he said over the singing. I can't hear you. I said, Mrs. Wentworth screamed at him, get off my lawn. The man gaped at her wheezing. Ave, ave, ave Maria, the crowd continued. You too, toots, she screamed at a thin elderly woman in a pink tulip-shaped hat. The woman held a small, well-worn prayer book to her throat. Well, she exclaimed, I've never. Oh, I'm sure you haven't, honey, Mrs. Wentworth mumbled as she paced back and forth along her lawn, glaring at the women, at the people gathered there. Slowly, the music died away in the crowd, and there was only the steady hum of almost 100 people gathered together.
From Mrs. Wentworth's Azaleas, Jamie Parsley reading from his book, The Downstairs Tenant. I feel called upon to mention that Jamie Parsley is also known as Father Jamie Parsley, a priest of the Episcopal Church. Some of the stories don't directly engage with religion, but that's one that certainly does. So the book is divided into three sections. And the first section is a series of short stories. And these are the ones that I think maybe called up this idea of prairie Gothic. You repudiate that label a little bit, but can you tell me like why it might be applied to these short stories?
Well, I think that term is kind of an interesting term, but I think Gothic in the same sense that if we look at American literature to some extent, someone like Flannery O'Connor would write stories that they called were Southern Gothic. These kind of darker stories, they had a kind of a dark tinge to them. They usually ended in some kind of tragedy or death or something like that. I guess that influence sort of came to me as well in writing these stories, that all of these stories have sort of a darker tinge. They're dealing with kind of the shadow side of life, shall we say. So I think in that sense, that's kind of where they would fall under that genre, shall we say.
Uh-huh. I'm talking with Jamie Parsley about his book, The Downstairs Tenant. Jamie, these stories are set all in North Dakota, so naturally that's interesting to those of us who live around here. And the time period, 50, 60 years ago, would you say?
Probably. I'd say mid-century, mid-20th century, somewhere about there.
Is that just what you felt moved to write, or was that a particular decision to go with that kind of mid-century North Dakota small town setting?
Well, I've always been fascinated with that period of time. I was not born during that time. I was born after it. And so it always held sort of a mystique for me. And so I think that's where a lot of my thinking came from in these stories. As the stories were kind of coming out, they just had that feel. The dialogue sort of felt like dialogue from that time. And so I think it just kind of naturally fell into place.
And as you've mentioned, the stories in this first section are on the darker side. And that's as I read them, it's notable. It's like, and it's interesting because, you know, knowing that you're an Episcopal priest, I get maybe there was a subconscious expectation that, I don't know, be more uplifting or redemptive, or and I guess there is sort of some redemption in there, maybe here and there. But just talk about the tone of the stories a little bit, and again, why you go that way.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting take on it. I don't know if there was any conscious choice in making them sort of dark. I think they just kind of came out that way. Again, I keep going back to Flannery O'Connor because she's a big influence in my life. And I think you can kind of tell an O'Connor kind of influence on the stories from that first section anyway. And they used to ask her that question a lot. Oh, these stories are so dark. People expected her, I think, being a Southern writer back in that mid-century period, that she was going to be like Margaret Mitchell or something. That's kind of what they expected from her. And she wasn't. She would write these kind of dark, violent stories. And she would say that, well, from her Christian perspective, her Catholic, she was a Roman Catholic, her very Catholic perspective, the biblical stories and the stories that she held close to her were always kind of dark and violent. I mean, the story of Jesus is kind of dark and violent at times, but there is a redemptive quality, though. You have to kind of look for it sometimes. And for someone like Flannery O'Connor, there would always be a sort of a moment of grace in each story. There would be something that would kind of, maybe it was very subtle, but there would always be one moment where, even in the midst of some sort of violence, there would be something very slight, slightly redemptive. There was a moment of just something that kind of makes it all right in some way. I don't know if I necessarily consciously put those in, and I don't know if I could necessarily find them if I had, but I find that true to my own experience to some extent. As a priest, I deal with a lot of kind of dark stories on occasion, certainly with parishioners and in my own life. And so I think that kind of reflected in these stories as well.
There were a couple of stories. I'm just curious to hear you talk about you know, how you felt about writing them, or what you feel they might mean. One of them, I think it's called Munda Cor Meum. And it's about a Lutheran boy who's kind of sort of infatuated with Catholicism and the rituals, and he gets some rosary beads, and he's so happy, and he goes to visit his kind of rough and tough country cousins, and they're bullying him, and they chase him down into the basement, and you know, they're kind of like, they're going to beat him up or something, and all of a sudden he starts coming out with Latin, with biblical Latin, and he doesn't know where it comes from, but they're kind of freaked out by it, and they all back off and leave him alone. So can you talk about that story a little bit?
Sure. I don't want to talk about my cousins necessarily as being rough country cousins, but they kind of were, actually. And I think that story comes out of my own experience too. You know, I don't usually write very autobiographical fiction if I write fiction, but that was probably the most autobiographical of all the stories in this book anyway. And I also, you know, I was raised Lutheran. I converted to Catholicism when I was 15 years old with the intention of becoming a Catholic priest. I ended up being an Episcopal priest, but a pretty high church Anglo-Catholic Episcopal priest. And I think that story sort of comes out of my own experience to some extent. It wasn't quite like that. That wasn't an actual specific thing that ever actually happened in my life. But I was definitely channeling some of my own youth into that particular story. I studied Latin like that when I was, you know, like 12 or 13, and it was all like church Latin. It was all the Latin from the old, you know, Catholic missals and things. And I probably completely mispronounced all of that Latin, but I would memorize it, and people would just be kind of like shocked that this Lutheran kid would be quoting like Latin from the Catholic Mass and carrying rosaries around and having statues of saints and things. So that came out of my own experience very much so.
And another one that struck me was one that it's set on a farm, and it's a mother and her young adult son who's home from university, and it starts off in the morning, and she is just sniping at him and picking at him, and he's volunteered to go help a neighbor in the field. The neighbor evidently had some kind of health problem, and she's just like on him about that, and then at the end he's killed in an agricultural accident. And did that come from some kind of incident that you heard about?
It is. Yes, actually, I won't go into real specifics about the actual story, but yes, I actually read about it in a newspaper article from the late 50s, early 60s about an agricultural accident. And I just kind of put this story together around that fact, that actual situation that happened at that time. And I did kind of a little research into the story. I happened to know people who knew people who knew people who were involved in that story. And so I was able to put this story, completely fictionalized, of course. I made a lot of, I added a lot of elements to that story. But yeah, it was sort of based on an actual event.
Now, the second section of your book based on these stories that are called Palm of the Hand stories, which were written by a Japanese author, and you sort of do freely adapted translations, kind of moving them sort of to an American context. And could you talk a little about those stories?
I can. So the Palm of the Hand stories were short stories written by Yasunari Kawabata, who was the first Japanese author to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. And I did these stories when I was in graduate school. I was getting an MFA at Vermont College. And I came across these beautiful little, almost haiku-like short stories that Kawabata did. And I was so fascinated with them. But when I would tell people about the stories, it didn't make any sense to them. They were going like, oh, this is so Japanese. And so, they weren't connecting with them. So I kind of took it upon myself about sort of adapting those short stories into American stories. And when I would tell people that, they would kind of criticize me or look at me kind of strangely. And I said, well, I'm only doing this like in the same sense that someone would take the Seven Samurai and make it into the Magnificent Seven. You know, they worked. I think it kind of worked for me anyway. The stories kind of clicked in a way that I wasn't certain they were going to.
Yeah, no, they're an interesting read and more, a little more cryptic and maybe surreal or imagistic than the first part.
Right.
And then you finish up the book with a play.
Yes.
How would you describe this play?
It's a ghost story. Another very gothic kind of, very gothic, I would say. This is probably the most gothic of all of them. And it's a ghost story that also is based on a story that I heard when I was in my 20s, I worked at a United Methodist Church in Arthur, North Dakota, and I ended up befriending several people up there, some of the parishioners up there. And I wasn't a pastor there. I worked as essentially a church secretary. And it was great, great experience for me for later on when I became a priest. But some of the people I would befriend would tell me these fascinating little stories about either themselves or their relatives or, you know, these small town stories. And one of them was this bizarre little ghost story that they told me. And that particular person was actually having a dinner party, and she was asking if I would write a little short play for her dinner party. And I'd made this play off a story that she told me about her brother and the house he lived in. And that was, and I adapted it at the first draft was about a Methodist. It was a Methodist parsonage. And I've changed it since and made it into an Episcopal rectory, essentially.
As a priest, how many of your parishioners have read your work and how do they relate to you with it?
I think most of them have read my work. I think most of them have read this work. Some of them are very blunt and will tell me exactly what they think. Most people, though, I think because we live up here in this part of the country, it's sort of like sermons on Sunday morning. They'll just kind of give me a generic, oh, that was good.
right. Was, so, oh, yeah, it was nice.
Yes, and it doesn't usually go any further than that. Yeah, it depends on the parishioner, of course, but I think most of them have engaged my writing in some way. Whether they fully appreciate it or not, well, I'll leave that up to them. So,
well, and you know, you mentioned sermons, and that may be in a way, again, knowing that you're an Episcopal priest, that may be an expectation as somebody goes into this book that, oh, it'll be kind of like a sermon. Each story will have a lesson, and you know, some kind of spiritual reference and stuff like that. I mean, how do you feel about that relation and connection between your role as a priest and your role as an author?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, if that's what they're looking for in these short stories, I don't think they're going to get it. But they're not sermons. They're not parables. I think that's what people think. They think, oh, he's a priest. He's going to be, his short stories are going to be like parables. And that's not necessarily what that is. The way I look at this is most of these stories or first drafts of these stories back when I was in my 20s before I was a priest. I think there is a distinction between my vocation as a priest and my vocation as a writer. Sometimes they interlap, sometimes they're just separate from each other. And I think the struggle that I've had throughout most of my adult life is that compartmentalized aspect of my life. You know, I'm a writer and a poet on one sense, I'm a priest on the other. Sometimes they come together, but most times they're just two separate things. And some people just know me as a writer and not as a priest. Some people only know me as a priest and not as a writer. So
I've got one last question about the cover. The cover has this great noir look, and I thought it was from some 50s, you know, pulp book or something like that. And then I look, no, it's a photo of Fargo.
It is. Yes, it is. It is a Broadway in Fargo. There's the Herp store right there on the cover. I actually found that. It is from the NDSU archives. I found it and I loved that photo so much that when the book was published, I said, please let me use this as the cover. And they very graciously allowed it.
Well, I would say it fits the book well.
Oh, thank you.
All right. We've been talking with Jamie Parsley. Thank you so much for being on with us.
Oh, thank you. This was wonderful.
I'm Bill Thomas. I was talking there with author Jamie Parsley. And Jamie Parsley's book is The Downstairs Tenant, published by the NDSU Press. You can find it and more by Jamie at ndsupress.org.